what you will, but I beg you not to kill me.
You don't want me to kill you for the sake of your family?
A tear ran into his beard.
And for my own sake, I don't want to die.
Of course he didn't want to die, for 3 acres of wood.
I don't kill men who steal 3 acres of lumber from the king and then pay for it dearly in gold. It's more the sort of crime that warrants a broken arm or the removal of a finger.
She moved toward him and pulled her dagger from its sheath. He breathed heavily, staring at the eggs and fruit on his plate. She wondered if he would vomit or begin to sob. But then he moved his plate to the side and his overturned glass and his silver. He stretched his arms onto the table before him. He bent his head and waited. A wave of tiredness swept over her. It was easier to follow Randa's orders when they begged or cried, when they gave her nothing to respect. And Randa didn't care about his forests. He only cared about the money and the power. Besides, the forests would grow back one day. Fingers didn't grow back. She slipped her dagger back into its sheath. It would be his arm, then, or his leg, or perhaps his collarbone, always a painful bone to break. But her own arms were as heavy as iron, and her legs didn't seem to want to propel her forward. The Lord drew one shaky breath, but he didn't move or speak. He was a liar and a thief and a fool. Somehow, she could not get herself to care. Katza sighed sharply.
I grant that you're brave, though you didn't seem it at first.
She sprang to the table and struck him on the temple, just as she'd done with Mergen's guards. He slumped and fell from his chair. She turned and went to wait in his great stone hall for Gidden and Al to return with the money. He would wake with a headache, but no more. If Randa heard what she had done, he'd be furious. But perhaps Randa wouldn't hear, or perhaps she could accuse the Lord of lying to save face, in which case Randa would insist she return with proof in the future, a collection of shriveled fingers and toes. What that would do for her reputation! It didn't matter. She didn't have the strength today to torture a person who didn't deserve it. A small figure came tripping into the hall then. Katza knew who she was even before she saw the girl's eyes, one yellow as the squash that grew in the north, and one brown as a patch of mud. This girl she would hurt. This girl she would torture if it would stop her from taking Katza's thoughts. Katza caught the child's eyes and stared her down. The girl gasped and backed up a few steps, then turned and ran from the hall. Chapter 5. They made good time, though Katza chafed at their pace.
Katza feels that to ride a horse at anything but breakneck speed is a waste of the horse,
Gidden said.
I only want to know if Rathen has learned anything from the Leaned Grandfather.
Don't worry, my lady. We'll reach the court by evening tomorrow, as long as the weather holds.
The weather held through the day and into the night, but sometime before dawn, clouds blotted out the stars above their camp. In the morning, they broke camp quickly and set out with some trepidation. Shortly thereafter, as they rode into the yard of the inn that kept their horses, raindrops plopped onto their arms and faces. They'd only just made it to the stables when the skies opened and water poured down. Rushing streams formed between the hills around them. It became an argument.
We can ride in the rain.
They stood in the stables, the inn 10 steps away, but invisible through a wall of water.
At the risk of the horses, at the risk of catching our deaths. Don't be foolish, Katza.
It's only water.
Tell that to a drowning man.
He glared down at her, and she glared back. A raindrop from a crack in the roof splashed onto her nose, and she wiped at it furiously.
"My lady, my lord!"
Katza took a deep breath, looked into his patient face, and prepared herself for disappointment.
"We don't know how long the storm will last. If it lasts a day, we'd best not be in it. There's no reason to ride in such weather."
He held up his hand as Katza started to speak.
"No reason we could give to the king without him thinking us mad. But perhaps it'll only last an hour, in which case we'll only have lost an hour."
Katza crossed her arms and forced herself to breathe.
"It doesn't look like the kind of storm that lasts an hour."
"Then I'll inform the innkeeper we're in need of food and rooms for the night."
The inn was some distance from any of the Midlands hill towns, but still, in summer, it had decent custom from merchants and travelers. It was a simple square structure, with kitchen and eating room below, and two floors of rooms above. Plain, but neat and serviceable. Katza would have preferred no fuss to have been made over their presence. But of course, the inn was unaccustomed to housing royalty, and the entire family threw itself into a dither in an attempt to make the king's niece, the king's underlord, and the king's captain comfortable. Against Katza's protests, a visiting merchant was moved from his room so that she might have the view from his window, a view invisible now, but which she imagined could only be the same hills they'd been looking at for days. Katza wanted to apologize to the merchant for uprooting him. She sent Al to do so at the midday meal. When Al directed the man's attention to Katza's table, she raised her cup to him. He raised his cup back and nodded his head vigorously, his face white and his eyes wide as plates.
"When you send Al to speak for you, you do seem so dreadfully superior, your ladyship,"
Giddens said, smiling around his mouthful of stew. Katza didn't answer. He knew perfectly well why she'd sent Al. If the man was like most people, it would frighten him to be approached by the lady herself. The child who served them was painfully shy. She spoke no words, just nodded or shook her head in response to their requests. Unlike most, she seemed unable to keep her eyes away from Katza's face. Even when the handsome Lord Giddon addressed her, her eyes slid to Katza's.
"The girl thinks I'll eat her."
"I think not. Her father's a friend to the council. It's possible you're spoken of differently in this household than you are in others, my lady."
"She'll still have heard the stories."
"Possibly. But I think she's fascinated by you."
Giddon laughed.
"You do fascinate, Katza."
When the girl came around again, he asked her name.
"Heiny?"
she whispered, and her eyes flicked to Katza's once again.
"Do you see our lady Katza, Laney?"
The girl nodded.
"Does she frighten you?"
The girl bit her lip and didn't answer.
"She wouldn't hurt you. Do you understand that? But if someone else were to hurt you, Lady Katza would likely hurt that person."
Katza put her fork down and looked at Giddon. She hadn't expected this kindness from him.
"Do you understand?"
Giddon asked the girl. The child nodded. She peeked at Katza.
"Perhaps you'd like to shake hands?"
The girl paused. Then she leaned and held her hand out to Katza. Something welled up inside Katza, something she couldn't quite name, a sort of sad gladness at this little creature who wanted to touch her. Katza reached her hand out and took the child's thin fingers.
"It's a pleasure to meet you, Laney."
Laney's eyes grew wide, and then she dropped Katza's hand and ran to the kitchen. Al and Giddon laughed. Katza turned to Giddon.
"I'm very grateful."
"You do nothing to dispel your ogreish reputation. You know that, Katza. It's no wonder you haven't more friends."
How like him. It was just like him to turn a kind gesture into one of his criticisms of her character. He loved nothing more than to point out her flaws, and he knew nothing of her if he thought she desired friends. Katza attacked her meal and ignored their conversation. The rain didn't stop. Giddon and Al were content to sit in the main room and talk with the merchants and the innkeeper, but Katza thought the inactivity would set her screaming. She went out to the stables, only to frighten a boy, little bigger than Lainey, who stood on a stool in one of the stalls and brushed down a horse. Her horse, she saw, as her eyes adjusted to the dim light.
I didn't mean to startle you. I'm only looking for a space to practice my exercises.
The boy climbed from his stool and fled. Katza threw her hands into the air. Well, at least she had the stable to herself now. She moved bales of hay, saddles, and rakes to clear a place across from the stalls and began a series of kicks and strikes. She twisted and flipped, conscious of the air, the floor, the walls around her, the horses. She focused on her imaginary opponents, and her mind calmed. At dinner, Al and Gideon had interesting news.
King Mergen has announced a robbery. 3 nights passed.
Has he?
Katza took in Al's face and then Gideon's. They both had the look of a cat that's cornered a mouse.
And what does he say was robbed?
He says only that a grand treasure of the court was stolen.
Great skies! And who's said to have robbed him of this treasure?
Some say it was a graceling boy, some kind of hypnotist who put the king's guards to sleep.
Others talk about a graceling man the size of a monster, a fighter who overcame the guards one by one.
Gideon laughed outright, and Al smiled into his supper.
What interesting news.
And then, hoping she sounded innocent.
Did you hear anything else?
Their search was delayed for hours because at first they assumed someone at court was to blame. A visiting man who happened to be a graceling fighter.
He lowered his voice.
Can you believe it? What luck for us.
Katza kept her voice calm.
What did he say, this graceling?
Apparently nothing helpful. He claimed to know nothing of it.
What did they do to him?
I've no idea. He's a graceling fighter. I doubt they are able to do much of anything.
Who is he? Where is he from?
No one said.
Gideon elbowed her.
Katza, come on. You're missing the point. It makes no difference who he is. They lost hours questioning this man. By the time they began to look elsewhere for the thieves, it was too late.
Katza thought she knew, better than Gideon or Al could, why Mergen had spent so much time grilling this particular graceling. And also why he'd taken pains not to publicize from where the graceling came. Mergen wanted no one to suspect that the stolen treasure was Tealif, that he'd held Tealif in his dungeons in the first place. And why had the leaned graceling told Mergen nothing? Was he protecting her? This cursed rain had to stop so that they could return to court and to Raffan. Katza drank, then lowered her cup to the table.
What a stroke of luck for the thieves.
Gideon grinned.
Indeed.
Have you heard any other news?
The innkeeper's sister has a baby of 3 months. They had a scare the other morning. They thought one of its eyes had darkened, but it was only a trick of the light.
Fascinating.
Katza poured gravy onto her meat.
The Mauncian queen is grieving terribly for Grandfather Tealif. A Mauncian merchant spoke of it.
I'd heard she wasn't eating.
It seemed to her a foolish way to grieve.
There's more. She's closed herself and her daughter into her rooms. She permits no one but her handmaiden to enter, not even King Lek.
That seemed not only foolish but peculiar.
Is she allowing her daughter to eat?
The handmaiden brings them meals, but they won't leave the rooms. Apparently the king is being very patient about it.
It will pass. There's no saying what grief will do to a person. It will pass when her father is found.
The council would keep the old man hidden for his own safety until they learned the reason for his kidnapping. But perhaps a message could be sent to the Mauncian queen to ease her strange grief? Katza determined to consider it. She would bring it up with Gideon and Al when they could talk safely.
She's leaned. They're known to be odd people.
It seems very odd to me,
Katza said. She'd never felt grief, or if she had, she didn't remember. Her mother, Randa's sister, had died of a fever before Katza's eyes had settled, the same fever that had taken Raffin's mother, Randa's queen. Her father, a northern Midlands border lord, had been killed in a raid across the border. It had been a western raid on a Nandarin village. It hadn't been his responsibility, but he'd taken up the defense of his neighbors and gotten himself killed in the process. She hadn't even been of speaking age. She didn't remember him. If her uncle died, she didn't think she would grieve. She glanced at Gidden. She wouldn't like to lose him, but she didn't think she would grieve his loss either. All was different. She would grieve for all, and her lady servant Helda, and Raffin. Raffin's loss would hurt more than a finger sliced off, or an arm broken, or a knife in her side. But she wouldn't close herself in her rooms. She would go out and find the one who had done it, and then she'd make that person feel pain as no one had ever felt pain before. Gidden was speaking to her, and she wasn't listening. She shook herself.
What did you say?
I said, Lady Dreamer, that I believe the sky is clearing. We'll be able to set out at dawn, if you like.
They would reach court before nightfall. Katza finished her meal quickly and ran to her room to pack her bags. Chapter 6. The sun was well on its way across the sky when their horses clattered onto the marble floor of Randa's inner courtyard. Around them on all sides, the white castle walls rose and stood brightly against the green marble of the floor. Balconied passageways lined the walls above, so that the people of the court could look down into the courtyard as they moved from one section of the castle to another and admire Randa's great garden of crawling vines and pink flowering trees. A statue of Randa stood in the center of the garden, a fountain of water flowing from one outstretched hand and a torch in the other. It was an attractive garden, if one did not dwell on the statue, and an attractive courtyard, but not a peaceful or private one, with the entire court roaming the passageways above. This was not the only such courtyard in the castle, but it was the largest, and it was the entrance point for any important residents or visitors. The green floor was kept to such a shine that Katza could see herself and her horse reflected in its surface. The white walls were made of a stone that sparkled, and they rose so high that she had to crane her neck to find the tops of the turrets above. It was very grand, very impressive, as Randa liked it. The noise of their horses and their shouts brought people to the balconies to see who had come. A steward came out to greet them. A moment later, Raffin came flying into the courtyard.
"You've arrived!"
Katza grinned up at him. Then she looked closer, stood on her toes, for he was so very tall. She grabbed a handful of his hair.
"Raff, what have you done to yourself? Your hair is positively blue."
"I've been trying a new remedy for headache, to be massaged into the scalp. Yesterday I thought I felt a headache coming on, so I tried it. Apparently it turns fair hair blue."
She smiled.
"Did it cure the headache?"
"Well, if I had a headache, then it did. But I'm not convinced I had one to begin with. Do you have a headache? Your hair's so dark, it wouldn't turn nearly as blue."
"I don't. I never do. What does the king think of your hair?"
Raffin smirked.
"He's not speaking to me. He says it's appalling behavior for the son of the king. Until my hair is normal again, I'm not his son."
Al and Gidden greeted Raffin and handed their reins to a boy. They followed the king's steward into the castle, leaving Katza and Raffin alone in the courtyard, near the garden and the splashing of Randa's fountain. Katza lowered her voice and pretended to focus on the straps that tied her saddlebags to her horse.
"Any news?"
"He hasn't woken. Not once."
She was disappointed. She kept her voice low.
"Have you heard of a leaned noble graced with fighting?"
"You saw him, did you?"
Raffin said, and she swung her eyes to his face, surprised.
"As you came into the courtyard, he's been lurking around. Hard to look that one in the eyes, eh? He's the son of the leaned king."
He was here? She hadn't expected that. She focused on her saddlebags once more.
"Roar's heir?"
"Great hills, no. He has 6 older brothers. His name is the silliest I've heard for the 7th heir to a throne. Prince Greening Grandemelian.
Raffin smiled.
Have you ever heard the like?
Why is he here?
Ah, it's quite interesting, really. He claims to be searching for his kidnapped grandfather.
Katsa looked up from her bags into his laughing blue eyes.
You haven't...
Of course not. I've been waiting for you.
A boy came for her horse, and Raffin launched into a monologue about the visitors she'd missed while she was gone. Then a steward approached from one of the entrances.
He'll be for you, for I'm not my father's son at the moment, and he doesn't send stewards for me.
He laughed, then left her.
I'm glad you're back,
he called to her, and he disappeared through an archway. The steward was one of Randa's dry, sniffy little men.
Lady Katsa, he said, welcome back. The king wishes to know if your business in the East was successful.
You may tell him it was successful.
Very good, my lady. The king wishes you to dress for dinner.
Katsa narrowed her eyes at the steward.
Does the king wish anything else?
No, my lady. Thank you, my lady.
The man bowed and scampered away from her gaze as quickly as possible. Katsa lifted her bags onto her shoulder and sighed. When the king wished her to dress for dinner, it meant she was to wear a dress and arrange her hair and wear jewels in her ears and around her neck. It meant the king planned to sit her next to some underlord who wished a wife, though she was probably not the wife he had in mind. She would ease the poor man's fears quickly, and perhaps she could claim not to feel well enough to sit through the entire meal. She could claim a headache. She wished she could take Raffin's headache remedy and turn her hair blue. It would give her a respite from Randa's dinners. Raffin appeared again, a floor above her, on the balconied passageway that ran past his workrooms. He leaned over the railing and called down to her.
Cat!
What is it?
You look lost. Have you forgotten the way to your rooms?
I'm stalling.
How long will you be? I'd like to show you a couple of my new discoveries.
I've been told to make myself pretty for dinner.
He grinned.
Well, in that case, he'll be ages!
His face dissolved into laughter, and she tore a button from one of her bags and hurled it at him. He squealed and dropped to the floor, and the button hit the wall right where he'd been standing. When he peeked back over the railing, she stood in the courtyard with her hands on her hips, grinning.
I missed on purpose.
Show off. Come if you've time.
He waved and turned into his rooms. And that's when the presence in the corner of Katz's eye took shape. He was standing a floor above her, to her left. He leaned his elbows on the railing, the neck of his shirt open, and watched her. The gold hoops in his ears and the rings on his fingers, his hair dark. A tiny welt visible on his forehead, just beside his eye. His eyes. Katsa had never seen such eyes. One was silver and the other gold. They glowed in his sun-darkened face, uneven and strange. She was surprised that they hadn't shone in the darkness of their first meeting. They didn't seem human. She couldn't stop looking at them. A steward of the court came to him then and spoke to him. He straightened, turned to the man, and said something in response. When the steward walked away, the Leonid's eyes flashed back to Katz's. He leaned his elbows on the railing again. Katsa knew she was standing in the courtyard's center, staring at this Leonid. She knew she should move, but she found that she couldn't. Then he raised his eyebrows a hair, and his mouth shifted into the hint of a smirk. He nodded at her, just barely, and it released her from her spell.
Cocky,
she thought.
Cocky and arrogant, this one.
And that was all there was to make of him. Whatever game he was playing, if he expected her to join him, he would be disappointed.
Greening Grandemelian, indeed.
She tore her eyes away from his, hitched her bags higher, and pushed herself forward into the castle, all the while conscious of the strange eyes burning into her back. Chapter 7. Helda had come to work in Randa's nurseries around the same time Katza began to dole out Randa's punishments. It was hard to know why she'd been less frightened of Katza than others were. Perhaps it was because she had borne a graceling child of her own. Not a fighter, only a swimmer, a skill that was of no use to the king. So the boy had been sent home, and Helda had seen how the neighbors avoided and ridiculed him simply because he could move through the water like a fish. Or because he had one eye black and the other blue. Perhaps this was why, when the servants had warned Helda to avoid the king's niece, Helda had reserved her opinion. Of course, Katza had been too old for the nurseries when Helda arrived, and the children of the court had kept Helda busy. But she'd come to Katza's training sessions when she could. She'd sat and watched the child beat the stuffing out of a dummy, grain bursting from cracks and tears in the sack, and slapping onto the floor like spurting blood. She'd never stayed long, because she always needed to return to the nursery. But still, Katza had noticed her, as she noticed anyone who didn't try to avoid her. Had noticed and noted her, but hadn't troubled herself with curiosity. Katza had had no reason to interact with a woman's servant. But one day, Helda had come when all was away, and Katza was alone in the practice rooms. And when the child had paused to set up a new dummy, Helda had spoken.
"In court, they say you're dangerous, my lady."
Katza considered the old woman for a moment, her gray hair and gray eyes and her soft arms folded over a soft stomach. The woman held her gaze, as no one other than Raffin, Al, or the king did. Then Katza shrugged, hoisted a sack of grain onto her shoulder, and hung it from a hook on a wooden post standing in the center of the practice room floor.
"The first man you killed, my lady, that cousin, did you mean to kill him?"
It was a question no one had ever actually asked her. Again, the girl looked into the face of the woman, and again the woman held her eyes. Katza sensed that this question was inappropriate coming from a servant, but she was so unused to being talked to that she didn't know the right way to proceed.
"No, I only meant to keep him from touching me."
"Then you are dangerous, my lady, to people you don't like. But perhaps you'd be safe as a friend."
"It's why I spend my days in this practice room."
"Mastering your grace. Yes, all gracelings must do so."
This woman knew something about the graces, and she wasn't afraid to say the word. It was time for Katza to begin her exercises again, but she paused, hoping the woman would say something more.
"My lady, if I may ask you a nosy question?"
Katza waited. She couldn't think of a question more nosy than the one the woman had already asked.
"Who are your servants, my lady?"
Katza wondered if this woman was trying to embarrass her. She drew herself up and looked the woman straight in the face, daring her to laugh or smile.
"I don't keep servants. When a servant is assigned to me, she generally chooses to leave the service of the court."
Helda didn't smile or laugh. She merely looked back at Katza, studied her for a moment.
"Have you any female caretakers, my lady?"
"I have none."
"Has anyone spoken to you of a woman's bleedings, my lady? Or of how it is with a man and a woman?"
Katza didn't know what she meant, and she had a feeling this old woman could tell. Still, Helda didn't smile or laugh. She looked Katza up and down.
"What's your age, my lady?"
Katza raised her chin.
"I'm nearly 11.
"And they were going to let you learn it on your own, and probably tear through the castle like a wild thing, because you didn't know what attacked you."
Katza raised her chin another notch.
"I always know what attacks me."
"My child, my lady, would you allow me to serve you on occasion? When you need service, and when my presence is not required in the nurseries?"
Katza thought it must be very bad to work in the nurseries if this woman wished to serve her instead.
"I don't need servants, but I can have you transferred from the nurseries if you're unhappy there."
Katza thought she caught the hint of a smile.
I'm happy in the nurseries. Forgive me for contradicting such a one as yourself, my lady, but you do need a servant, a woman servant, because you have no mother or sisters.
Katza had never needed a mother or sisters, or anyone else either. She didn't know what one did with a contradictory servant. She guessed that Randa would go into a rage. But she was afraid of her own rages. She held her breath, clenched her fists, and stood as still as the wooden post in the center of the room. The woman could say what she wanted. They were only words. Helda stood and smoothed her dress.
I'll come to your rooms on occasion, my lady.
Katza made her face like a rock.
If you ever wish a break from your uncle's state dinners, you may always join me in my room.
Katza blinked. She hated the dinners, with everyone's sideways glances, and the people who didn't want to sit near her, and her uncle's loud voice. Could she really skip them? Could this woman's company be better?
I must return to the nurseries, my lady. My name is Helda, and I come from the Western Midlands. Your eyes are so very pretty, my dear. Goodbye.
Helda left before Katza was able to find her voice. Katza stared at the door that closed behind her.
Thank you,
she said, though there was no one to hear, and though she wasn't sure why, her voice seemed to think she was grateful. Katza sat in the bath and tugged at the knots in her tangle of hair. She heard Helda in the other room, rustling through the chests and drawers, unearthing the earrings and necklaces Katza had thrown among her silk undergarments and her horrid bone chest supports the last time she'd been required to wear them. Katza heard Helda muttering and grunting, on her knees most likely, looking under the bed for Katza's hairbrush or her dinner shoes.
What dress shall it be tonight, my lady?
Helda called out.
You know I don't care.
There was more muttering in response to this. A moment later, Helda came to the door carrying a dress bright as the tomatoes Randa imported from Leenid, the tomatoes that clustered on the vine and tasted as rich and sweet as his chef's chocolate cake. Katza raised her eyebrows.
I'm not going to wear a red dress.
It's the color of sunrise.
It's the color of blood.
Sighing, Helda carried the dress from the bathing room.
It would look stunning, my lady, with your dark hair and your eyes.
Katza yanked at one of the more stubborn knots in her hair. She spoke to the bubbles gathered on the surface of the water.
If there's anyone I wish to stun at dinner, I'll hit him in the face.
Helda came to the doorway again, this time with her arms full of a soft green silk.
Is this dull enough for you, my lady?
Have I no grays or browns?
Helda set her face.
I'm determined that you wear a color, my lady.
Katza scowled.
You're determined that people notice me.
She held a tangle of hair before her eyes and pulled at it savagely.
I should like to cut it all off. It's not worth the nuisance.
Helda put the dress aside and came to sit on the edge of the bath. She lathered her fingers up with soap and took the tangled hair out of Katza's hands. She worked the curls apart, bit by bit, gently.
If you ran a brush through it once every day while you were traveling, my lady, this wouldn't happen.
Katza snorted.
Gin would get a good laugh out of that. My attempts to beautify myself.
That knot untangled, Helda moved to another.
Don't you think Lord Gidden finds you beautiful, my lady?
Helda, how much time do you suppose I spend wondering which of the gentlemen finds me beautiful?
Not enough,
Helda said, nodding emphatically. A hiccup of laughter rose into Katza's throat. Dear Helda. She saw what Katza was and what she did, and Helda didn't deny that Katza was that person. But she couldn't fathom a lady who didn't want to be beautiful, who didn't want a legion of admirers. And so she believed Katza was both people, though Katza couldn't imagine how she reconciled them in her mind. In the great dining hall, Randa presided over a long, high table that might as well have been a stage at the head of the room. Three low tables were arranged around the perimeter to complete the sides of a square, giving the guests an unobstructed view of the king. Randa was a tall man, taller even than his son, and broader in the shoulders and the neck. He had Raffin's yellow hair and blue eyes, but they weren't laughing eyes like Raffin's. They were eyes that assumed you would do what he told you to do, eyes that threatened to bring you unhappiness if he didn't get what he wanted. It wasn't that he was unjust, except perhaps to those who wronged him. It was more that he wanted things the way he wanted them, and if things weren't that way, he might decide that he'd been wronged. And if you were the person responsible, well, then you had reason to fear his eyes. At dinner, he wasn't fearsome. At dinner, he was arrogant and loud. He brought whomever he wanted to sit with him at the high table, often Raffin, though Randa spoke over him and never cared to hear what he had to say. Rarely Katza. Randa kept his distance from her. He preferred to look down on his lady killer and call out to her, because his yelling brought the attention of the entire room to his niece, his prized weapon, and the guests would be frightened, and everything would be as Randa liked it. Tonight, she sat at the table to the right of Randa's, her usual position. She wore the soft green silk and fought the urge to tear off the sleeves that widened at her wrists and hung over her hands and dragged across her plate if she wasn't careful. At least this dress covered her breasts, mostly. Not all of them did. Helda paid her no attention when she gave instructions about her wardrobe. Giddens sat to her left. The lord to her right, whom she supposed to be the eligible bachelor, was a man not old but older than Giddens, a small man whose bugged eyes and stretched mouth gave him the appearance of a frog. His name was Davit, and he was a border lord from the Midlands' northeast corner at the border of both Nander and Estel. His conversation wasn't bad. He cared a great deal about his land, his farms, his villages, and Katza found it easy to ask questions that he was eager to answer. At first, he sat on the farthest edge of his chair and looked at her shoulder and her ear and her hair as they talked, but never her face. But he grew calmer as the dinner progressed and Katza didn't bite him. His body relaxed, he settled into his chair and they spoke easily. Katza thought him unusually good dinner company, this Lord Davit of the Northeast. At any rate, he made it easier for her to resist tearing out the hairpins that dug into her scalp. The leaned prince was also a distraction, no matter how much she willed him not to be. He sat across the room from her and was always in the corner of her eye, though she tried not to look at him directly. She felt his eyes on her at times. Bold he was, and entirely unlike the rest of the guests, who carefully pretended she wasn't there, as they always did. It occurred to her that it wasn't just the strangeness of his eyes that disconcerted her. It was that he wasn't afraid to hold hers. She glanced at him once when he wasn't looking. He raised his eyes to meet her gaze. Davit had asked the same question twice before Katza heard him and turned from the Leonid's uneven stare to answer. She supposed she would have to face those eyes soon. They would have to talk. She would have to decide what to do with him. She thought that Lord Davit would be less nervous if he knew there was no chance of Randa offering him her suit.
"Lord Davit, have you a wife?"
He shook his head.
"It's the only thing my estate lacks, my lady."
Katza kept her eyes on her venison and carrots.
"My uncle is very disappointed in me, because I intend never to marry."
Lord Davit paused and then spoke.
"I doubt your uncle is the only man who finds that disappointing."
Katza considered his pointy face and could not stop herself from smiling.
"Lord Davit, you're a perfect gentleman."
The lord smiled in return.
"You think I didn't mean it, my lady, but I did."
Then he leaned in and ducked his head.
"My lady, I wish to speak with the council."
The voices of the dinner guests were lively, but she heard him perfectly. She pretended to focus on her dinner. She stirred her soup.
"Sit back. Act as if we were only talking.
Don't whisper, for it draws attention.
The lord settled back into his seat. He raised his finger for a serving girl, who brought him more wine. He ate a few bites of his venison and turned to Katza once more.
The weather has been very kind to my aging father this summer, my lady. He suffers in the heat, but it's been cool in the northeast.
I'm happy to hear it. Is it information or a request?
The lord spoke around his mouthful of carrots.
Information?
He sliced another piece of venison.
It becomes more and more difficult to care for him, my lady.
Why is that?
The elderly are prone to discomforts. It's our duty to keep them comfortable and safe.
Katza nodded.
True words, indeed.
She kept her face even, but excitement rattled at the edges of her mind. If he had information about the kidnapping of the Leonid grandfather, they would all want to hear it. She reached under the heavy tablecloth and rested her hand on Gidden's knee. He leaned toward her slightly, without turning away from the lady on his other side.
You're a man of great information, Lord Davit,
she said to the lord, or rather to her plate, so that Gidden could hear.
I hope we'll have the opportunity to speak with you more during your stay at court.
Thank you, my lady,
Lord Davit said.
I hope so, too.
Gidden would spread the word. They would meet that night in her own rooms, because they were secluded and because they were the only rooms not traveled by servants. If she could, she'd find Raffin beforehand. She'd like to visit Grandfather Teelif. Even if he was still sleeping, it would be good to see with her own eyes how he was faring. Katza heard the king speak her name, and her shoulders stiffened. She didn't look at him, for she didn't wish to encourage him to draw her into his conversation. She couldn't make out his words. Most likely he was telling some guest the story of something she'd done. His laughter rolled across the tables in the great marble hall. Katza tried to push back the scowl that rose to her face. The Leonid prince was watching her. She felt that, too. Heat licked at her neck and crawled along her scalp.
My lady,
Lord Davit said,
are you quite all right? You look a bit flushed.
Gidden turned to her then, his face flashing with concern. He reached for her arm.
You aren't ill.
She pulled back, away from him.
I'm never ill,
she snarled, and she knew suddenly that she must leave the hall. She must leave the clatter of voices and the sound of her uncle's laugh, Gidden's smothering concern, the Leonid's burning eyes. She must get outside, find Raffin, or be on her own. She must, or she would lose her temper, and something unthinkable would happen. She stood, and Gidden and Lord Davit stood with her. Across the room, the Leonid prince stood. One by one, the rest of the men saw her standing and rose. The room quieted, and everyone was looking at her.
What is it, Katza?
Gidden asked, reaching for her arm again. So that he wouldn't be shamed before everyone in the hall, she allowed him to take it, though his hand was like a brand that burned into her skin.
It's nothing. I'm sorry.
She turned to the king, the only man in the room who wasn't on his feet.
Forgive me, Lord King. It's nothing. Please sit down.
She waved her hand around the tables.
Please.
Slowly the gentlemen sat, and the voices picked up again. The king's laugh rang out, directed at her, she was sure. Katza turned to Lord Davit.
Please excuse me, my lord.
She turned to Gidden, whose hand still grasped her elbow.
Let go, Gidden. I want to take a walk outside.
I'll go with you.
He started to rise, but at the warning in her eyes, he sat back again.
Very well, Katza. Do what you will.
There was an edge to his voice. She had probably been rude, but she didn't care. All that mattered was that she leave this room and go to a place where she couldn't hear the drone of her uncle's voice. She turned, careful not to catch the eyes of the Leonid. She forced herself to walk slowly, calmly, to the doorway at the foot of the room. Once through the doorway, she ran. She ran through corridors, around corners, past servants who flattened themselves trembling against walls as she flew by. Finally, she burst into the darkness of the courtyard. She crossed the marble floor, pulling pins from her hair. She sighed as her curls fell around her shoulders and the tension left her scalp. It was the hairpins and the dress and the shoes that pinched her feet. It was having to hold her head still and sit straight. It was the infuriating earrings that brushed against her neck. That was why she couldn't stand to spend one moment longer at her uncle's fine dinner. She took off her earrings and hurled them into her uncle's fountain. She didn't care who found them. But that was no good, because then people would talk. The entire court would speculate about what it meant that she'd thrown her earrings into her uncle's fountain. Katza kicked off her shoes, hitched up her skirt, and climbed into the fountain, sighing as the cold water ran between her toes and lapped at her ankles. It was a great improvement over her shoes. She would not put them on again tonight. She waded out to the glimmers she saw in the water and retrieved her earrings. She dried them on her skirt, dropped them into the bodice of her dress for safekeeping, and stood in the fountain, enjoying the coolness enveloping her feet, the drifting air of the courtyard, the night noises, until a sound from inside reminded her of how much the court would talk if she were found waiting, barefoot and wild-haired, in King Randa's fountain. They would think her mad. And perhaps she was mad. A light shone from Raffin's workrooms, but it wasn't his company she sought after all. She didn't want to sit and talk. She wanted to move. Movement would stop the whirring of her mind. Katza climbed out of the fountain and hung the straps of her shoes over her wrists. She ran. Chapter 8. The archery range was empty and dark except for the lone torch that glowed outside the equipment room. Katza lit the torches along the back of the range so that when she returned to the front, the man-shaped dummies stood black against the brightness behind them. She grabbed a bow randomly from the supplies and collected handfuls of the lightest colored arrows she could find. Then she drove arrow after arrow into the knees of her targets, then the thighs, then the elbows, then the shoulders, until she'd emptied her quiver. She could disarm or disable any man with this bow at night. That was clear enough. She exchanged the bow for another. She yanked the arrows from the targets. She began again. She'd lost her temper at dinner, and for no reason. Randa hadn't spoken to her, hadn't even looked at her, had only said her name. He loved to brag of her, as if her great ability were his doing, as if she were the arrow and he the archer whose skill drove her home. No, not an arrow. That didn't quite capture it. A dog. To Randa, she was a savage dog he'd broken and trained. He set her on his enemies and allowed her out of her cage to be groomed and kept pretty, to sit among his friends and make them nervous. Katza didn't notice her heightened speed and focus, the ferocity with which she was now whipping arrows from her quiver, the next arrow notched in the string before the first had hit home. Not until she sensed the presence behind her shoulder did she stir from her preoccupation and realize how she must look. She was savage. Look at her speed, look at her accuracy, and with a poor bow, curved badly, strung badly. No wonder Randa treated her so. She knew. It was the Leonid who stood behind her. She ignored him, but she slowed her movements, made a show of taking aim at thighs and knees before she fired. She became conscious of the dirt under her feet and remembered, too, that she was barefoot, with her hair falling around her shoulders and her shoes in a pile somewhere near the equipment room. He would have noticed. She doubted there was much those eyes didn't notice. Well, he wouldn't have kept such stupid shoes on his feet either, or left pins in his hair if his scalp were screaming. Or perhaps he would. He seemed not to mind his own fine jewelry, in his ears and on his fingers. They must be a vain people, the Leonid.
Can you kill with an arrow, or do you only ever wound?
She remembered his raspy voice from Mergen's courtyard, and it was taunting her now, as it had done then. She didn't turn to him. She simply took two arrows from her quiver, notched them together, pulled, and released. One flew to her target's head, and the other to its chest. They hit with a satisfying thud and glowed palely in the flickering torchlight.
I'll never make the mistake of challenging you to an archery match.
There was laughter in his voice. She kept her back to him and reached for another arrow.
You didn't forfeit our last match so easily.
Ah, but that's because I have your fighting skill. I lack your skill with a bow and arrow.
Katza couldn't help herself. She found that interesting. She turned her eyes to him, his face in shadows.
Is that true?
My grace gives me skill at hand-to-hand combat, or sword-to-sword. It does little for my archery.
He leaned back against the great slab of stone that served as a table for the equipment of the archers. His arms were crossed. She was becoming accustomed to this look, this lazy look, as if he could nod off to sleep at any moment. But it didn't fool her. She thought if she were to spring at him, he'd react quickly enough.
Then you need to be able to grapple with your opponent to have an advantage.
He nodded.
I may be quicker to dodge arrows than someone ungraced, but in my own attack, my skill is only as good as my aim.
Katza believed him. The graces were odd like that. They didn't touch any two people in quite the same way.
Can you throw a knife as well as you shoot an arrow?
Yes.
You're unbeatable, Lady Katza.
She heard the laughter in his voice again. She considered him for a moment, and then turned away and walked down the course to the targets. She stopped at one, the one she'd killed, and yanked the arrows from its thighs, its chest, its head. He sought his grandfather, and Katza had what he sought. But he didn't feel safe to her, this one. He didn't feel quite trustworthy. She walked from target to target, pulling out arrows. He watched her, she felt it, and the knowledge of his eyes on her back drove her to the back of the range, where she put the torches out, one by one. As she extinguished the last flame, darkness enveloped her, and she knew she was invisible. She turned to him then, thinking to examine him in the light of the equipment room without his knowing. But he slouched, arms crossed, and stared straight at her. He couldn't see her. It wasn't possible. But his gaze was so direct that she couldn't hold it, even knowing he didn't know she stared. She walked across the range and stepped into the light, and his eyes seemed to change focus. He smiled at her ever so slightly. The torch caught the gold of one eye and the silver of the other. They were like the eyes of a cat or a night creature of some kind.
Does your grace give you night vision?
He laughed.
Hardly. Why do you ask?
She didn't answer. They looked at each other for a moment. The flush began to rise into her neck again, and with it a surging irritation. She'd grown far too used to people avoiding her eyes. He would not rattle her so, simply by looking at her. She wouldn't allow it.
I'm going to return to my rooms now.
He straightened.
Lady, I have questions for you.
Well, and she knew they must have this conversation eventually, and she preferred to have it in the dark, where his eyes wouldn't unnerve her. Katza pulled the quiver over her head and laid it on the slab of stone. She placed the bow beside it.
Go on.
He leaned back against the stone.
What did you steal from King Mergen, lady? 4 nights past?
Nothing that King Mergen had not himself stolen.
Ah, stolen from you?
Yes, from me. Or from a friend.
Really?
He crossed his arms again, and in the torchlight he raised an eyebrow.
I wonder if this friend would be surprised to hear himself so called?
Why should he be surprised? Why should he think himself an enemy?
Ah, but it's just that. I thought the Midlands had neither friends nor enemies. I thought King Randa never got involved.
I suppose you're wrong.
No, I'm not wrong.
He stared at her, and she was glad for the darkness that kept his strange eyes dim.
Do you know why I'm here, lady?
I was told you're the son of the Leonid King. I was told you seek your grandfather, who's disappeared. Why you've come to Randa's court, I couldn't say. I doubt Randa is your kidnapper.
He considered her for a moment, and a smile flickered across his face. Katza knew she wasn't fooling him. It didn't matter. He may know what he knew, but she had no intention of confirming it.
King Mergen was quite certain I was involved in the robbery. He seemed quite sure I knew what object had been stolen.
And that's natural. The guards had seen a Graceling fighter, and you're no other than a Graceling fighter.
No. Mergen didn't believe I was involved because I was graced. He believed I was involved because I'm Leonid. Can you explain that?
And of course, she would give him no answer to that question, this smirking Leonid. She noticed that the neck of his shirt was now fastened.
I see you close your shirt for state dinners,
she heard herself saying, though she didn't know where such a senseless comment came from. His mouth twitched, and his words, when he spoke, did not conceal his laughter.
I didn't know you were so interested in my shirt, lady.
Her face was hot, and his laughter was infuriating. This was absurdity, and she would put up with it no longer.
I'm going to my rooms now,
she said, and she turned to leave. In a flash, he stood and blocked her path.
You have my grandfather.
Katza tried to step around him.
I'm going to my rooms.
He blocked her path again, and this time he raised his arm in warning. Well, at least they were relating now in a way she could understand. Katza cocked her head upward and looked into his eyes.
I'm going to my rooms, and if I must knock you over to do so, I will.
I won't allow you to go until you tell me where my grandfather is.
She moved again to pass him, and he moved to block her, and it was almost with relief that she struck out at his face. It was just a feint, and when he ducked, she jammed at his stomach with her knee, but he twisted so that the blow didn't fall true, and came back with a fist to her stomach. She took the blow, just to see how well he hit, and then wished she hadn't. This wasn't one of the king's soldiers, whose blows hardly touched her, even with 10 of them on her at once. This one could knock the wind out of her. This one could fight, and so a fight was what she would give him. She jumped and kicked at his chest. He crashed to the ground, and she threw herself on top of him, struck him in the face once, twice, three times, and kneed him in the side before he was able to throw her off. She was on him again like a wildcat, but as she tried to trap his arms, he flipped her onto her back and pinned her with the weight of his body. She curled her legs up and heaved him away, and then they were on their feet again, crouching, circling, striking at each other with hands and feet. She kicked at his stomach and barreled into his chest, and they were on the ground again. Katza didn't know how long they'd been grappling when she realized he was laughing. She understood his joy, understood it completely. She'd never had such a fight. She'd never had such an opponent. She was faster than he was offensively, much faster. But he was stronger, and it was as if he had a premonition of her every turn and strike. She'd never known a fighter so quick to defend himself. She was calling up moves she hadn't tried since she was a child, blows she'd only ever imagined having the opportunity to use. They were playing. It was a game. When he pinned her arms behind her back, grabbed her hair, and pushed her face into the dirt, she found that she was laughing as well.
Surrender!
Never!
She kicked her feet up at him and squirmed her arms out of his grasp. She elbowed him in the face, and when he jumped to avoid the blow, she flew at him and flattened him to the ground. She pinned his arms, as he had just done, and pushed his face into the dirt. She dug one knee into the small of his back.
You surrender, for you're beaten.
I'm not beaten, and you know it. You'll have to break my arms and legs to beat me.
And I will, if you don't surrender.
But there was a smile in her voice, and he laughed.
Katza, Lady Katza, I'll surrender on one condition.
And the condition?
Please, tell me what's happened to my grandfather.
There was something mixed in with the laughter in his voice, something that caught at Katza's throat. She didn't have a grandfather. But perhaps this grandfather meant to the Leonid Prince what Al, or Helda, or Raffin meant to her.
Katza,
he said into the dirt.
I beg you to trust me as I've trusted you.
She held him down for just a moment, and then she let his arms go. She slid from his back and sat in the dirt beside him. She rested her chin in her palm, considering him.
Why do you trust me, when I left you lying on the floor of Mergen's courtyard?
He rolled over and sat up, groaning. He massaged his shoulder.
Because I woke up. You could have killed me, but you didn't.
He touched his cheekbone and winced.
Your face is bleeding.
He stretched out his hand to her jaw, but she waved it aside and stood.
It doesn't matter. Come with me, Prince Greening.
He heaved himself to his feet.
It's Poe.
Poe?
My name. It's Poe.
Katza watched him for a moment as he swung his arms and tested out his shoulder joints. He pressed his side and groaned. His eye was swelling and blackening, she thought, though it was hard to tell in the darkness. His sleeve was torn, and he was covered with dirt, absolutely smeared from head to foot. She knew she looked the same, worse, really, with her messy hair and bare feet. But it only made her smile.
Come with me, Poe. I'll take you to your grandfather.
Chapter 9. When they walked into the light of Raffin's workrooms, his blue head was bent over a bubbling flask. He added leaves to the flask from a potted plant at his elbow. He watched the leaves dissolve and muttered something at the result. Katza cleared her throat. Raffin looked up at them and blinked.
I take it you've been getting to know each other. It must have been a friendly fight if you've come to meet together.
Are you alone?
Yes, except for Ban, of course.
I've told the prince about his grandfather.
Raffin looked from Katza to Poe, and back to Katza again. He raised his eyebrows.
He's safe. I'm sorry for not...